bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't
wizard,
care. I don't.
Wizard,
I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome into Bet the Board Monday Night Football edition for NFL Week 12, a Cyber Monday edition, so to speak. And Payne, hopefully Black Friday was a little kinder on you than it was on some folks around the country.
Yeah, picked up some gifts for the family. Hopefully pick up a few more today, but other than that, not a great turkey day with the Cowboys. Recouped some stuff on Sunday. It was a decent Sunday. Could have been much better if the Titans came through or the Steelers came through.
The magical voice you hear on the other end of the line, the one, the only, Payne Insider. You can follow him on Twitter, at Payne Insider. I'm Todd Furman. You can follow me there as well, at Todd Furman. And Payne, as we try and go through to recap Monday like we do each and every week during the NFL season, I guess we start with the low light. There is one man out of work this morning right down there in your native Miami, Florida. Bill Lazor fired as Miami Dolphins offensive coordinator. Zach Taylor, at the ripe age of 32, assumes the responsibility.
Yeah, Bill Lazor should have been out weeks and weeks ago. He just refuses to call run plays. Now, granted, it wasn't going to be overly successful this week going against that Jets front. Then Pouncey goes down. But Ryan Tannehill set a new passing record. 58 attempts. That's just not going to get it done. So it was time to move on. I'm just not sure what Dan Campbell's doing. Maybe he thinks he has a chance, weeding out some of the dead weight, so to speak. We know he has that relationship with Tannenbaum and Parcells. So he's trying to hold on to his job, do anything he can.
Yeah, I don't know if Dan Campbell will be able to withstand the firing squad at the end of the year, of course, as you mentioned. Still trying to do everything to endear himself to Dolphins fans, the organization, and everyone else out there. We look at impressive performances from the week that was, along with the disappointing sides. We'll open the floor to you. Any teams, players, or individuals that really jumped off the page as far as the good was concerned?
I was very happy about the San Francisco 49ers' effort. That was a game that I think they probably could have won outright. A lot of weird officiating, let's say, throughout the entire Week 12 card, but there was a lot of weird stuff going on there. But Blaine Gabbert got it done. Very impressive, Blaine Gabbert. We've talked about him. Looks like he's resurrecting himself there. He can really throw zip on the ball. And one interesting thing, there was an article that I was reading a few weeks ago, and I'm not sure why they didn't make this move sooner to Gabbert. He's actually faster than Kaepernick. They'd time these guys with the ball in their hands running, and he's actually better in that department as well. So they got us the cover. I know we took double digits on that, close 7.5. So anytime you can dominate the market like that, it's good to get a win that you expect. And that was a box-to-wire effort there from the 49ers. So very impressed with them this week and Blaine Gabbert. We'll see what they do moving forward.
And the 49ers, a very interesting game this weekend as they'll travel to Soldier Field to take on the Bears, who will be favored for the first time all season. And I want to go with the Bears, who looked very impressive on Thursday night against the Green Bay Packers, specifically their defensive effort in the second half, earning a shutout, keeping Aaron Rodgers and company off the board. I know Devontae Adams drew all sorts of criticism, and we can pick apart the Green Bay offensive effort, but I think a lot of that had to do with the Bears and the way they went through their coverage. And you look at this team, clearly a lot of us didn't expect much all of a sudden in the thick of the NFC playoff race with the big divisional road win at Lambeau.
Yeah, we talked about the Bears the last few weeks, though. If we were gauging teams in the NFC, where would we have them ranked? This was a team that we thought was just on the inside of the top five or fighting for that cusp of getting in there. Defensively, the last 3 weeks, 5.2 yards per play. That's fantastic. When you look at the landscape, you're a 7-point home favorite against the 49ers. You're likely a small favorite against the Redskins. You go to the Vikings, who we think are a little overrated. You go to the Bucks, they have a tough time winning at home, and you close the season at home with the Lions. They control their own destiny here.
I think what's interesting when you look at the Bears, and it just resonates in so many greater context in the NFL, if you don't turn the football over and you show effort each and every week, it gives you a chance to go out there and try and pick up a victory. And I know we talked about it at great lengths, Adam Gase simplifying the offense, but Jay Cutler protecting the ball, surrounded by a ton of weapons, the Forte and Langford combo has been outstanding, gives them a kind of, I don't want to say thunder and lightning type approach, but gives them a two-headed monster in the backfield, and they just look a lot better, and the defense, of course, thriving when you're forced to drive the length of the field against them.
John Fox, every single week they have shown up. They've had a good game plan. There has not been an ounce of quit. You get effort from them every single week this season. And when you're looking at a team that hasn't been favored all year until this week, that's all you can hope for in your underdogs, that they're going to show up with a good game plan and that they're going to play a full 60 minutes.
And a shout-out to Jay Cutler for understanding that the Bears hadn't been favored in every game, referencing that in his post-game presser on Thanksgiving. Payne, is it time that we finally give the Colts credit for rallying as a team? What are the Indianapolis Colts? A very impressive second half comeback against the Tampa Bay Bucs, trailing 12-9. We know the sharp guys took Tampa and the three, but Matt Hasselbeck and this Colts defense outstanding in yet another win.
Yeah, that was a very weird game in terms of watching the market all week long. Professionals and public both on the Bucs. Some money. There was a differing opinion from one group who laid it with the Colts, but Matt Hasselbeck, you have to give him props. 40 years old, 4-0 this season. They really couldn't get the ground game going at all. Throws for over 300 yards. Does it against a Bucs defense that had been gradually improving each week. So that was a huge win. It looks like it's going to be a two-horse race between them and the Texans as we finish out this season in the South.
Are you buying into the Texans and their defensive renaissance over the last four games?
I think you have to a little bit. 4.4 yards per play surrendered by the defense the last three games. And when you look at their opponents, it wasn't, you know, chopped liver. They faced Cincinnati. You faced the Saints with Drew Brees with 2 weeks of prep time. So they're doing it on the defensive side of the ball. But the offense is coming around as well. 24 points again this past week. I think if you're going to score 24 with that defense, it's going to make things tough. I think they're going to be very, very competitive. I know there's another rematch between the Colts and Texans later this year, so I think that'll probably decide the division.
A very interesting game for the Houston Texans this week. They'll go on the road to Orchard Park, New York, to take on the Bills, a Buffalo team that'll clearly be in desperation mode at 5-6, watching their season slip away by the week. Payne, one last team for me that I thought was relatively impressive. We talked about some of the NFC North members on Thanksgiving. The Detroit Lions, resurrected from the dead, three straight wins. Matt Stafford, five touchdowns, really torching the Philadelphia defense. But I think just the energy level we've seen from this team, that's simply amazing considering that they were absolutely pathetic for their trip to London against Kansas City. Really thought they'd be a go-against down the stretch. And now 4-7, I'm not going to say they're playoff contenders, but if things break the right way, maybe we're talking about the Lions playing spoiler the remainder of the year.
That energy, was that in comparison to what we saw from the Eagles?
It's all relative, buddy. It's all relative to the energy. Because no one describes me as energetic, but on this podcast, I have to be the ray of light.
I don't want to make it sound like it's all great in Detroit, all right? they're facing teams that, number one, aren't very good, and number two, they're in bad spots with internal issues. We talked about the Packers' issues with the quarterback, the offensive coordinator, the head coach. They weren't getting along. Now everyone's seeing it after I mentioned it a month ago. You beat the Raiders, who were, you know, kind of turned back into the Raiders. It was an early start. You get the Eagles in the best spot you can possibly imagine. So it'll be interesting. Let's see how they do this week. The Packers, the price looks a little short to where we were at the look-ahead line. And this is a revenge game here. I'm not sure. Let's see what the Lions are.
We've seen some money come in for that Thursday night over. A game that we'll preview in much greater detail, not today, but on the Thursday edition of the Bet the Board podcast powered by Bet Online. And with all the impressive efforts of the weekend, we're not only glass half full guys around here. You have to be glass half empty. May as well start with the Philadelphia Eagles and the dumpster fire that's become the city of brotherly love.
There's really not much to be said. It's clear Chip has lost the locker room. When you quit and embarrass yourself on national TV, literally quitting in front of millions, it says a lot. And, you know, after back-to-back double-digit win seasons, it's tough to see things go south so quickly. And I'm kind of the guy who doesn't like to overreact. But you're looking at, quote-unquote, this offensive guru. His offense is 29th in the NFL, 5.2 yards per play. And on terms of offensive efficiency, we have him 28th by our metrics. So There's something clearly not going on in Philadelphia with Chip, with that locker room. It might be time to move on.
If there's something clearly not going on in Philadelphia, how do we describe the Falcons' recent struggles? A team that we faded early and often have since gotten off that bandwagon, but eventually there has to be value in the market for a team that can't seem to get out of their own way right now.
We have to stop giving Matt Ryan a pass. It's that simple. He has been horrific. He has cost them game after game this season, and he's just not very good at this point. He's only 30. We'll see if he can turn it around. I know he doesn't have Devontae Freeman. Should get him back this week. It does make for an interesting spot. But Matt Ryan, we have to stop giving him a pass at this point. He's been horrible this season.
How much of that is attributed to his lack of weapons? We know he didn't play without Freeman. Clearly, Julio Jones, an elite wide receiver. But aside from that, there's not a whole lot else out there. But we've seen other quote-unquote elite quarterbacks continue to thrive even without that top-tier talent.
Yeah, it's that. Obviously, you know, they were doing a good job getting Julio Jones moved around pre-snap, getting him in different spots so teams can't key on him. But there's not a ton there offensively, especially when you talk about Devontae Freeman not being in the mix. But you pay Matt Ryan what you pay him not to turn the ball over in certain spots, not to throw interceptions in his own end zone, just things of that nature that you can't do. And so there is an issue there. And then the other question mark here is, you know, is the grass greener on the other side? The defense has been an issue for years. You bring in a defensive guy, now all of a sudden your offense starts to slip a little bit. It's tough to have that perfect medium, and I think we're seeing that here with the Falcons.
Yeah, and when you talk about defense is slipping and offense is struggling, there's no greater poster child for that than the free pass that's been given to Jeff Fisher and the St. Louis Rams. Another lethargic effort getting absolutely boat raced by the Cincinnati Bengals over the weekend. Do we point the finger at Fisher? Do we point the finger at the defense that hasn't lived up to expectations? Nick Foles, what the hell is wrong in the city by the arch?
We talked about this how long ago? 6 weeks ago? 5 weeks ago, maybe? How does this guy still have a job? It's been nothing but just disappointment in St. Louis. If this team gets shipped to L.A., you cannot bring him with you. You have to start fresh. The game seems to have passed him by at this point. He's delusional. He was delivering his little cursing speech after the game about how his team hadn't quit. There was some quit in that team. I've watched the game twice now, and it seems he's lost the locker room. Clearly doesn't have a quarterback. Nick Foles is struggling. Now the ground game is struggling to get going. They're keying on Gurley, making the quarterbacks beat them. But Jeff Fisher, his time is gone. He's got to go.
And the interesting part, Jeff Fisher, a USC guy, so he may get his walking papers just in time for the team to start taking their first snaps in Los Angeles. A game, Payne, of course, near and dear to your heart over the weekend. I don't know where you want to go with what ails the Pittsburgh Steelers or exactly how they fell apart, not only from the outright win, but not getting the cover as a 4.5, 5-point underdog against the Seahawks.
Yeah, make a tackle. That's kind of what that game comes down to. It stinks getting the best of the number and still watching that game fall short. I think you have to put it, and it's tough to say because – you know, he had a great passing performance, but you have to put that on Big Ben. Just too many mistakes. Before the last play of the game, you know, they were outgaining Seattle by nearly 200 yards. At the end of the game, they outgained them by over 100 yards, but you can't turn the ball over four times. Some of those turnovers by Big Ben were just head-scratching. So, as good as a game as he played, you just can't have those mistakes at those costly times. The game, to me, really changed early on, yes. Pittsburgh recovered, but the fake field goal, I mean, my God, you're bringing Landry Jones, and it basically alerts the entire world what you're attempting to do here. It didn't shock or stun anybody. This is a guy who's not usually on the special teams unit in that spot. So if you even look at an ounce of film, you're going to say, something is up here. Just too many mistakes for Pittsburgh. They really threw that game away. Should have won outright. Should have absolutely covered. But it looks like sportsbooks made out okay with that game, with the public and professionals being on Pittsburgh.
And Pittsburgh will be featured in a primetime spot this weekend when they play host to the Colts. A game that will get a much better indication of who's starting at quarterback for Pittsburgh when Big Ben goes through concussion protocol there. Do have to say, for despite Pittsburgh coming up a bit short, Marcus Wheaton absolutely outstanding with over 200 yards receiving. Clearly, Pittsburgh had the right game plan offensively. They just couldn't execute, losing that turnover battle 4-0.
That was the final kick in the nuts. You get 2 minutes and you're thinking, oh, backdoor cover here. And Big Ben checks himself out. A little lightheaded.
You have to take care of that dome, and then they get to midfield with the D'Angelo Williams screen pass. And I'm not quite sure who Landry Jones was throwing to, knowing he had that much time to try and get in the end zone. But I digress completely. Any other teams that really impressed you over the weekend or failed to live up to those high pain insider expectations?
The Titans was a tough loss. Not saying that the Titans are very good, but at some point, Mariota, Malarkey, they have to come together and start using this kid's legs. I get he's improving. He's doing some things okay in the pocket. It's very short passing game, but he's not a pocket guy at this point. You have to do what he does best. There weren't very many designed runs in this game. We look at a kind of a series right before half. You're down 10-6. You get 9 yards on first down. You cross midfield. You pass the ball 3 consecutive downs when you need about an inch. You have to start using this kid's legs. He's still making very bad decisions. They could have tied the game at 17. Throws a pick in the red zone that we don't even know who he's throwing the ball to. It's not even close. To end the game, again, throwing the ball, it's not even close. I know your buddy Clay Travis loves him, thinks he's, you know, the second coming. But this right now, at this point, he's not a very good pocket passer. And we have to start using his legs more. He's got to step up and say something. Malarkey has to, you know, not be so blind. So when you talk about the Titans, aside from the horrendous call by Jeff Triplett, you got to do things offensively that cater to the talents of your players.
A little bit surprising when you saw how effective he was using the legs in the Thursday night game against Jacksonville. When he decided to take off from the pocket, still has electric speed and an element that forces defense to try and respect that run that a lot of these quarterbacks can't really bring to the table. Speaking of Jeff Triplett, do you have any fine words to our friend in the black and white?
I'm usually not a guy that just hammers the refs, but this call was so egregious that nobody knew who it was on. And you look at the All-22 film, they called it on B.W. Webb, and I kid you not, he was on the opposite side of the field from where the play was going. It was him and Amari Cooper, and I think they brushed hips at about the 4-yard mark. And then both guys essentially just, like, quit on the play in terms of they knew it wasn't going to either of them. They were just jogging. And on 4th and 8, it just you basically handed a team a win. If this was in a national spotlight, you are investigating Jeff Triplett for, you know, basically cheating. Maybe he's a sports bettor. I don't know. I'm not going to make those claims. But if it was on national
TV. Here we
go.
It took till week 12, and we now have allegations that officials are betting sports.
If it was on national TV, this would be investigated. Because you look at a play in that Sunday night game where Demaryius Thomas was tugged a little bit, and you see Twitter, and they are going nuts. I kid you not. What happened to Demaryius Thomas was first-degree murder compared to what they called in the Titans game. It was that bad.
And speaking of the Sunday night game, I did want to save that for last. Are we ready to anoint Brock Osweiler the second coming of John Elway? Do we give credit to the Denver Broncos for battling back? Do we say the Patriots' late game execution without running the football with about 3 minutes to go in that one ended up costing him? But which direction do we go, and what's our major takeaway from the huge game that we saw on Sunday night from two of the AFC heavyweights?
The major takeaway is it looks like Blaine Gabbert's a quarterback. He's got the size. He's got the arm.
He's got great skin.
He's got the scruff. He's got the nice hair. His interview after the game was quarterback-like. I think Brock Osweiler is going to be a pretty good quarterback. We saw at Chicago, he had a tough time when you took away his first read. Now we saw the Patriots, their defense, very good schematically. They took away his first read a lot, and he really progressed in that area, looking at the second target, the third target, had no issues dropping it down to his tailbacks or tight ends. And this is kind of a comfort thing at this point. The more reps you're going to get, the better he's going to be, and that was a prime time win. And what was interesting, I know you were ready to give credit to Elway for saying, oh, this was his guy. But with a lot of this stuff, it's right time, right place. It takes a lot of fortunes. I'm not going to give Elway all the credit for Brock Osweiler, because a lot of people don't know this. Before the start of the season, Osweiler was on the trade block, and all you needed to get Brock Osweiler was a sixth-round pick, and nobody bit. So that's what Elway thought of this guy. Probably thinks a little differently of him now.
Yeah, I mean, definitely two strong outings, and we'll see how Brock can handle that success with a trip this weekend against division rival on the road, installed as a field goal favorite against the San Diego Chargers. If you're not following the voices on Bet the Board podcast, it's never too late to jump on the train. Payne Insider, at Payne Insider on Twitter. You can follow me at Todd Furman, same spot. Subscribe to this fine voyage for your ears, iTunes, SoundCloud, or visit us at toddstake.com. Payne, look ahead previews and preview numbers when we talk about some of the games. Rare to see massive line moves, but we have a couple that have really taken off. You mentioned the Packers and Lions. That game, six and a half going into this weekend's results. We see the Packers struggle on Thanksgiving. We see the Lions look like world beaters against the Eagles. A three-point adjustment in the market. Green Bay listed as a three-point chalk against the Lions.
Yeah, tons of market move there based upon what we've seen with our eyes just last week. I'm not sure the Packers will close three. revenge spot here. Now, I'm not running to bet the Packers at this point, but if you like the Packers, your time to go is probably now.
And again, a game we'll preview in greater detail on this very same podcast, the Thursday edition, as we look towards week 13. Panthers and Saints. Panthers look ahead number 3.5. We're now seeing the Panthers a full touchdown favorite as the Saints get saddled with yet another loss. The defense, to their credit, didn't give up north of 40 points. They held the Texans largely in check, only surrendering 24 in that losing effort.
I gave myself a pat on the back for not bucking the Panthers against the Redskins. Couldn't do it on Thanksgiving. Had to go to the well with the Cowboys. And unfortunately, I think the Saints might be getting my money this week. We shall see. it's tough at this point. We're just going down with the ship. 2014 Jets, 2015 Carolina Panthers, for differing reasons, seem to be the team that we just can't figure out the last 2 years. The Jets,
they're 9-2 against the spread. 9-2.
Just keep covering the number.
There's always one team on this Bet the Board podcast in only year two that continues to get our money. It'll be interesting to see who it becomes in year three, but I don't want to get that much further ahead of ourselves. Falcons, Bucks, a 2.5-point favorite in the market right now at Bet Online as they play host to Atlanta. Atlanta on the look-ahead number 1.5, talking about nearly a 4-point move despite the Bucks looking pretty lethargic offensively against Indy. We know their struggles at home, but as we mentioned earlier, the Falcons just can't seem to get out of their own way.
Yeah, the Falcons are a mess at this point. Hopefully you get Devontae Freeman back. That will certainly change some things. This is a tough spot for me. I'd like to take the Falcons if I could get three here, but we know the Bucks. What do you need in the NFL? And it's very simple. You need a quarterback, and it appears Tampa Bay has found their man. We know Winston through the early part of the season, 7 interceptions the first 4 weeks, 3 interceptions the last 7 weeks. The market seems to like them. The sharp bettors seem to like them. So it'll be interesting to see where this market goes. And I think a lot of the professionals are saying, look out for the Bucks. And the simple reason is this. When you look at net yards per play, the Bucks are 0.6 in the positive direction. That's better than the 11-0 Panthers. That's better than the 9-2 Bengals. And that's better than the 7-4 Packers. So you see why professionals are sort of gravitating the last few weeks towards the Bucks.
Big question for you on the Bucks, Payne, in your own opinion. Do you handicap this team differently at home versus on the road, especially as a favorite, when the expectation is on them to win games versus the role that they've thrived in all year, catching north of 4 points at minimum as a dog?
Yeah, I mean, we've been on this Bucks team a lot, even the last 2 years. I can remember us taking the Bucks last year in Pittsburgh. It was one of our biggest bets of the season. They seem to be a much better bet-on team on the road. They seem to struggle at home. This isn't really shocking. This seems like a lot of teams in Florida for whatever reason. We take that same MO and approach with the Dolphins as well. For whatever reason, they just have to get over the hump. There's not a huge home field advantage there, But you would think that would start to change with a quarterback, obviously, with the team being better, with progress being shown. So I'm not really sure what's going on there with the home field advantage and why they've been so lackluster in that department. Obviously, a big comeback win against Dallas at home. And maybe we're at that point where the market continues to disrespect them at home, and we see a sudden change moving forward at this point.
I think home field advantage definitely something to consider when you look at Jacksonville, Miami, and Tampa, all teams that fail to live up to their odds maker expectations when playing games in their own building. Not a huge move as far as numbers are concerned, but when you talk about key numbers, it's definitely worth a small discussion. Kansas City, look ahead numbers. You were talking about them being a 2.5-point favorite against the Oakland Raiders. Now that's up to a full field goal. Kansas City, the talk of the town, a team you could have had at 200-1 to win the Super Bowl when they were sitting at 1-5. Now all of a sudden, they look to be an absolute juggernaut and a thorn in the side of everyone else in the AFC.
Yeah, pretty significant move, though, when you talk about that key number, as you alluded to. We'll see what Oakland is. Obviously, you know, they got that win gifted by the NFL. It seems like the NFL thinks the league's a little more entertaining when Oakland is back in the mix. So they got gifted that win, and now they're alive again. This is a huge game for Oakland. I would expect to see some money on the Raiders, even as well as the Chiefs have been playing. And maybe you close in that area of where this look-ahead line was off the key number.
And, of course, a game that we saw the market adjust mainly because of an injury. The Redskins, a 7-point move. They were a 3-point home underdog looking ahead against the Cowboys, assuming that the Cowboys would have the services of Tony Romo. Now the Skins, a 4-point favorite. I guess this begs the questions, are the first-place Redskins worthy of being over a field goal favorite against anybody, but are the Dallas Cowboys in straight free fall as they look to now just play out the stretch?
I know we'll get into this game on next Monday's podcast a bunch, but the drop-off to Romo is pretty significant. I know Castle obviously has experience as starting quarterback. I probably got some confidence there, that late touchdown against the Carolina Panthers. But mentally, where is this Dallas locker room? It was a Super Bowl-like prep week. They got Romo back. Let's bust through the walls here. This is our time. This is our spot. And you lay an egg, and Romo goes down again on Thanksgiving. Mentally, where are you? Washington, it looks like the market is starting to catch up with them. That road-home dichotomy that we talked about on last week's podcast. Clearly some market manipulation there, dummying that game up, trying to get through with the Redskins. That was the buy point we talked about on this podcast. And they went box to wire on the Giants. So this is just a different team at home. Kirk Cousins is confident at home for whatever reason. You're starting to get some of those weapons back that he can throw to with Reed, with DeSean Jackson. It looks like you got a two-headed monster there at running back. So this is a significant move, absolutely. But it'll be interesting to see the mental makeup of that Dallas locker room after a deflating loss and Washington riding high atop of that NFC East division.
And one Sunday game that we'll cover in much greater detail, they just opened up the new adjusted number. Denver, a 4.5-point road favorite as they head to San Diego. This game is 3.5 beforehand. Clearly, they can become the public darlings. We'll see how Denver and mainly Brock Osweiler handle prosperity against a Chargers team that struggles on the offensive line, but may be in a good spot to try and play spoiler for their longstanding division rivals. And I know a lot of the Bet the Board listeners, they stayed tuned in throughout the course of this podcast because of this gem headed their direction, the Monday Night Football showdown in the AFC North between the Cleveland Browns and the Baltimore Ravens. Right now, you're looking at Cleveland, a 4-point home favorite with a total of 41 as they play host to Baltimore. This number has gone all over the place, opening as low as 1 and pick amid quarterback questions, concerns, call them what you will. Josh McCown getting the nod against Matt Schaub for the purple and black.
Weather looks pretty clean for a late November, early December kickoff in Ohio. 46 degrees, 10% chance of rain. Winds less than 10 miles per hour, and that's just one capping nugget that this time of year you need to be factoring in. You need to look at every single game that you're playing, weather this time of year. So that's pretty much gorgeous weather in Cleveland. Book your travel reservations immediately. I think the question here is Super Bowl MVP Flacco, what's the downgrade to Schaub? So what do your numbers look like there, Todd? And then what's your upgrade from Manziel to McCown, and that'll probably help us talk about where this market is right now.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting game because when we talked about this on Thursday, had we done that, I think we could have advised a lot of our audience that they would have been well served to lay the 2.5 with Cleveland and then reassess their position. I know both you and I sitting on smaller bets with the Browns at better numbers, less than 3, but the handicap's significantly different here at 4, and we talk about teams all the time. It's one thing when you're betting Cleveland as an underdog where they have a margin of error. Laying over a field goal, even to a Matt Schaub-led Baltimore team, who we know is a little bit weak in the secondary, I think you have to try and make the case for Baltimore here. Do I love the side or either particular angle at the number? Absolutely not, but at 4, I want no part of laying the points with the Browns.
Yeah, well, I think the downgrade from Flacco to Schaub is pretty significant. I think when you look at what Matt Schaub is at this point, we really haven't seen him since 2013. He was basically benched for locating the opposing team more than his own, lost his last 8 starts. And you have to look at what the market's telling us. A dysfunctional organization that's 2-8 is a better team on Monday night. And it's not just one injury here when you talk about this Ravens team. It's everyone at this point. Everyone thinks about the big names, Flacco, Forsett, Steve Smith, Suggs. But about the guys that aren't really publicly known, you're looking at Eugene Monroe, your starting left tackle. He's out again. You're going to have your starting guard out, Osamili. He's out. Before the Jacksonville game, partly the reason the Jags were steamed, your starting center's out. Zuda will miss it again tonight. So you're talking about 3 guys out on the offensive line for Matt Schaub. That's going to be huge. When you talk about trying to find elements in a game like this, uncover motivational angles. If you did your required reading, every article that you read is talking about the Browns putting on the season sweep here. Since the Ravens were founded in 1996, Browns have only swept the season series twice. Once in 2001, once in 2007. So there's something to play for here. Every article I read, every player interview that I listened to was talking about this season sweep. And at 2-8, it's a Monday night football game in Cleveland, of all places. That's probably got to get your juices flowing as an organization.
What do you make of the Johnny Manziel distraction? I know we talked about numbers, and I'll say, for me, Joe Flacco, all things being equal, if that was the only piece Baltimore was missing, I'd make a 5, 5.5 point adjustment there. All the offensive line situations, clearly much bigger than that, and you're not seeing the market move that. For me, Josh McCown and Johnny Manziel, I said it earlier in the year, and I know you've echoed a lot of the same sentiments, maybe disagreeing on the exact number, but I think McCown offers roughly a 2, 2.5 point upgrade over Manziel and some of his skill sets.
Yeah, I think McCown's probably about a 1, 1.5 point upgrade. So we're right around the same ballpark there. I don't really think much of the distractions at this point. It's a dysfunctional organization. These players have dealt with this for as long as they've been in Cleveland. There's been Johnny talk as long as he's been with the Browns. So I think McCown's able to step in there and do some things. We've talked about this price. We laid some 1.5. We laid some 2.5. Obviously, at this price, it's much, much different when you're talking about 4, 4.5. If this got to 4.5, I'd consider even buying back, you know, probably a third of my position. We're talking about trying to middle that 3 and that 4, which offers just a ton of value. When it comes to this total, I know a lot of sharp guys like the under. Again, I don't think weather's going to be a factor here at all.
Yeah, and I know it's always tough. We typically don't tend to gravitate towards playing primetime overs, but I look at this number for 2 teams kind of playing out the stretch. We know the motivation. Clearly, Cleveland has mentioned this will be a measuring stick type game, people playing for their jobs. I think 41 more than manageable if you believe Baltimore can score some points themselves. I think Cleveland has the capabilities of hanging 24 to maybe even 27 points themselves against the Ravens defense. It's not real good against the pass. We know McCown is going to sling it all over the yard, and Cleveland has been pretty quick to abandon the ground game in most of their football games we've seen so far this season.
2 quarterbacks that don't have an issue turning it over in their own end, potentially creating short fields either. I'm certainly not going to buck the information that is on the under, but and so I won't be on this total. It's tough, but if I had a gun to my head, probably going over in this situation at 41. 41 is that key number. So it's tough. Not a very good game at this point between 2 teams, and the market is just clearly kind of out of whack at this point, so I can't really suggest a play on Cleveland. So it's tough to give our listeners anything of great value with this game at the current price, unfortunately.
Fortunately for them, though, there is the opportunity. If you're a longtime user of betonline.ag, you'll have all sorts of live wagering opportunities right at your disposal. So if Cleveland does happen to get down 3-0 early in the game, you might be able to lock in a price consistent with Payne and myself laying anything less than a field goal for this Monday night mayhem or mishap, whatever the hell you want to call it, with two teams struggling to find their identity amid lost seasons. Payne, we'll do it again on Thursday as we always do, a Week 13 preview, a lot of the marquee games. Of course, in-depth analysis of the Green Bay Packers trip to Detroit to take on the Lions and some of the other marquee games. But between now and then, any final words of wisdom as far as our loyal listeners are concerned?
No, nothing too crazy at this point. We'll reconvene on Thursday and hopefully dime out a few more winners.
For Payne Insider, follow him on Twitter, at Payne Insider. I'm Todd Furman. You can follow me on Twitter as well, at Todd Furman. Sign up for the Bet the Board podcast, SoundCloud, iTunes. Visit us at toddstake.com. Best of luck with your Monday Night Football selection. Payne mentioned, we'll be right back at you on Thursday. And in the meantime, hopefully we'll see you at the window.